Hello, OT lovers and preachers. This is another episode of Summer Shorts here at First Reading Podcast. The passage for today is 2 Samuel 11, 26 through 12, 13a. Right, so the later half of chapter 11 and then the first few verses in chapter 12. And yes, this passage is bloody. It's full of greed, lies, and theft. So be warned, okay? So what is the passage about? I'm glad you asked that question. If you remember, this is the story about David planting Uriah at the forefront of war so that he will be terminated, you know? And if you know the story, again, Uriah is the husband of Bathsheba, the lady that David at this point in the passage had impregnated. According to the passage, David kills Uriah, then makes Bathsheba his wife and raises a family with her. So that's the story. So what am I going to be talking about today? Of course, I'm going to be talking about David, no doubt. But what I want to draw your attention to about David is how his actions demonstrates abuse and misuse of power, especially how that is played out in the interactions that he has with the prophet Nathan later on as the story unfolds. And for me, when I think about David's use of power in this passage, I think about three things. I think about erasure, I think about confrontation, and I think about something that I'm calling faceless victimization. Let me explain. Erasure. Who and what is being erased in the passage? Clearly, it is the presence of Uriah, right? And in that, what the implications of his absence means for, you know, Bathsheba's secret pregnancy with David. You know, by arranging for Uriah to be terminated, I think that David had hoped that he would create space for himself to take over Uriah's marriage, but also that Uriah's being gone, the secret pregnancy and the potential shame that would come from that and from people knowing about the pregnancy would go away, right? And indeed, it went away for a minute, but not entirely. So in this case, the way I think about erasure is that erasure intersects with other themes such as greed and theft, while also concealing, you know, or attempting to conceal David's shame. The second point that I have here is confrontation. Since God hates to see power abuse at the expense of the powerless, he sends a word of judgment through the prophet Nathan. And this is how Nathan comes onto the scene. Note how the prophetic word of judgment comes up in chapter 12 from verse 1 forward. It comes through what I call wise confrontation, employing the communication tool of an anecdote, right? A story in place of a real story, right? And I applaud Nathan for the anecdote because I presume that confronting a man of power as David with the facts of his own deeds is very tough. It's very hard. Like, David was a warrior. He was, you know, the people's favorite, the Lord's favorite, the man after God's own heart. Like, how dare you confront him with what he's done? It's so hard that I'm not surprised that the text reserved a task for a prophet, the task of confrontation for a prophet. It didn't reserve it for a cupbearer, nor a fellow warrior, nor the spouse of the king, not even a scribe, but a prophet. And I think that is consistent with what prophets do in the Bible. They confront people with God's oracle, mostly of judgment. And the last one is victimization, right? Victimization and judgment, because I think victimization goes along with judgment in the passage. And this is where I possibly would draw a preaching tip. Note how easy it was for David to be angry at the man in the anecdote of the prophet Nathan and to pronounce a death penalty almost instantly. Nathan was like, yeah, there was a guy who did so and so. What do you think, David? What do you think the guy deserves? Instantly. In chapter 12, verse 15, the text says, David's anger stirred up against this man. Who is this man? Right? Why was it so easy for him to be angry at another man's deeds and not his own deeds? I argue that this is so because the man in the anecdote was faceless and was nameless. You see, facelessness and namelessness and even silence of others dehumanizes them. It makes them less of a person, and that makes it easy for, you know, for one to blame and one to pass out judgment. And I think David could imagine a death penalty for this man and not for himself, easily because in the passage, the man was to him just another person. You know, dehumanization through renaming, through re-identification, in order to strip off personhood from other human beings who deserve fair treatment and other, you know, good opportunities like all other human beings, has been a tool that has been used by other humans throughout history. Think of colonization, think of the Holocaust, think of gender-based violence and, you know, trafficking and things like that in our time and our day. I think that all of these forces of power employ the same strategies of dehumanization through renaming or re-identification, and in most cases, stripping people of their humanity, of their personhood, in order to impose upon them judgment, strict judgment and blame. And indeed, in migration discourses in America, as an example, we see the same tactic, right? For instance, it's easy to assume that all migrants are criminals when you imagine them as faceless and nameless individuals. However, when you consider the migrants that you know personally by name, the ones you encounter in school, the ones you encounter at work, the ones in your neighborhood, the ones who fix your car, the ones who fix your AC, the car heating and all those things, right? You see a different kind of a migrant because you know them by name. You know them by faces. And so it's harder to treat other people unfairly and to judge them unfairly of the same things that we are guilty of if we imagine them as just other people. And this is why I appreciate the work of the Me Too movement or the Say Her Name movement, which is a movement that has been persistent in America for a long time, because they allow us to make room for inclusion, which I think ensures healthy community building. You get my point, preachers. I would say less. You know, consider Nathan's speech. Consider David's reaction and the turn of events in that interaction. I think there's something powerful in there that is preachable. Thanks for listening and see you around. Peace out.